I'm going to be talking about the Women's Health and Mindfulness, or WAM, program, which is a provider-led healthy weight program for lesbian and bisexual women over 40 in the San Francisco Bay Area. I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to talk a little bit about WAM, the program components, the outcomes that we were interested in, how we recruited women, a little bit of our early data analyses that we're working on now, and future directions. So why are we funded and why is this important? Literature tells us that adult sexual minority women, or lesbian and bisexual women for our project, may face challenges improving their health. They're more likely to be obese compared to heterosexual women, which is why the Office of Women's Health funded this project. And we were concerned that it might mean that they were at increased risk for chronic disease, even though current research doesn't show an increased risk for lesbian and bisexual women, despite the disparities in weight. So I'm going to skip this first. So WAM, as I said, stands for Women's Health and Mindfulness. It's a provider-based intervention for lesbian and bisexual women of size over age 40. So it was funded by the Office of Women's Health. The first project funded by the Office of Women's Health for specifically for lesbian and bisexual women, so that piece was really exciting for us. And it funded 5 projects across the country, 2 in San Francisco, 1 in New York, 1 in D.C., and 1 in Missouri. And all of us created new or adapted existing programs specifically to lesbian and bisexual women over 40. So I'm definitely focusing on midlife and beyond in terms of women's health across the lifespan. This is a community-based participatory research project, so we did 7 focus groups with women who met the criteria for WAM to hear about what they wanted to know in terms of their health, how did they want to improve their health, what they liked and didn't like about previous research or previous health programs they belonged to. And from that, we created a brand new 12-week health program led by clinic-based mental health professionals. So we had a licensed clinical social worker and a clinical psychologist who both had experience with the population and experiences in leading groups. And the groups were held at Lyon Martin in San Francisco and also in the East Bay. If you're familiar with the Bay Area, it was held in Berkeley, but we had folks from all over the East Bay from October 2013 to September of 2014. So we just wrapped up data collection in the last month or so. So the main components of WAM, the first one is mindfulness, which is in the name, so it's really important. Although I want to go back to my research aims and questions first. So the main important question for the Office of Women's Health is this program feasible for lesbian and bisexual women over 40? And then we were interested in some specific health outcomes. So we really wanted to focus on increased glycemic control. So we measured the hemoglobin A1C, which is an average blood sugar over 3 months, and reduced cholesterol. Improved nutrition, so we wanted women in the program to be able to increase adherence to dietary guidelines, basically eating more fruits and vegetables. And then increased energy expenditure, so an increase in moderate intensity physical activity per week. So our program centered on 2 things. One is a health at every size perspective. So we wanted to focus less on weight and weight loss specifically and more on improving overall health, which is why we were more worried or interested in the outcomes based on blood sugar and cholesterol versus weight or weight loss. And mindfulness is the other big piece. So the mindfulness piece focused on mindfulness-based stress reduction and mindful eating. So all of them were lots of breath and short, quick components that focus on allowing women to do mind-body connection to help reduce their stress. Another important piece was obviously nutrition. So as I said, we did this from a health at every size perspective, where we focused less on calorie counting, traditional calories in, calories out messages, and rather on making small, manageable changes that would improve their overall health. So, eating 1 more serving of leafy greens per week, or reducing the amount of processed food you eat by once per day, or substituting foods. We did have a registered dietitian on staff, which was a big draw for participants, and they met with the registered dietitian 1 to 3 times throughout the program, as well as the dietitian doing some guest lectures. I include this graphic here of the Eat the Rainbow because it was one of the more popular in the program. As a reminder to think, how many colors have I eaten today? Have I only eaten white foods today? Maybe I should eat something blue or green. And then physical activity was the third major component. So we did have a personal trainer on staff who met with the participants 1 to 3 times and also did some guest lecturing. I included this photo because one of the most important things that women talked about learning from the personal trainer was how to safely get in and out of a chair using a squatting type motion, which sounds really simple, but as you'll see in the baseline data, we had a lot of women with mobility issues, and a lot, our age range was from like 40 to 82. So as you get older, getting up and down out of a chair becomes increasingly important as it's to do it safely. So in terms of recruitment, you would think in the Bay Area that it would be so easy to find a number of lesbian and bisexual women to do this 12-week health program, and you would be wrong. So we did a combination of recruitment, both community-based traditional recruitment, so we went to Pride events, we did lesbian-based listservs, other community events, as well as recruited from Lion Martin additionally. So we did a chart review as well as staff buy-in. So it sort of shook out that about 60% of our participants were from community-based sources and about 40% were from Lion Martin patient pools. This is an example of one of our flyers. So as you can see, one thing we didn't use overweight or obese in any of our curriculum or flyers. We used people of size as a phrase, sort of people first language, because we didn't want to focus on weight loss. In terms of methods, we did a randomized step wedge design. This means that we randomized women into either immediate or delayed start groups. This allowed us to have a control group where women waited 3 months while another group started, but they still got to do the program. So we felt it was more ethical and in keeping with community-based methods to allow everyone to go through the program but still have this rigorous control group that we could use for comparison. And we ended up with 80 women who completed baseline data, including a survey and blood test. And the analyses that I'm going to present here are intent-to-treat analyses. So it's ones that don't include participation in the program in terms of determining outcomes. Then if you're interested in methods, I can talk more about this. But basically, we look at median differences for continuous measures, and proportions are compared using chi-square. So in terms of feasibility, our attendance rates were kind of all over the place. This is a table of total sessions attended. We had quite a bit of drop-off, and I think it's comparable to other intervention programs with this target population, and as always a challenge in intervention research, but it's also something we dealt with. So as you can see, a number of women didn't attend any groups. A lot of people had schedule work changes, especially by the time the delayed start groups were able to begin. And then we had this weird people who only attended 4 sessions, which we haven't quite been able to explain yet. And then we had the higher dose people, right, so people attending 9 through 12 sessions. In terms of baseline data, a couple things to highlight. Our mean age was 53. We did have quite a diverse sample, so I highlighted the fact that we had a number of multiracial folks. It was half white, but that's actually quite lower than a lot of other studies on lesbian and bisexual women and intervention studies. And we had a high number of Latina participants as well. Our population was fairly highly educated. But only about half of them were working at the time, and most of them had income below $30,000 a year. And if you're familiar with the Bay Area, that's very low. A number of them are retired, so that's part of it, but a number of them are unemployed and on disability full-time. Most of our participants identified as cisgender, that is, they were assigned female at birth and they still identify as female, but we did enroll trans women in our study as well because Lion Martin is an LGBT clinic. We felt that we'd be going against our mission to exclude trans women from the program. Most of them had medical insurance. This was mid-Affordable Care Act enrollment rollout, so we were happy with that number, but I think it's higher upon exit. And I wanted to highlight some main chronic conditions, so things like arthritis and chronic pain were the most commonly self-reported, followed by hypertension and diabetes. In terms of physical activity, about half our participants were doing at least 1 day of moderate physical activity per week, and about only a quarter were doing vigorous physical activity, sort of some room for improvement there. And then nutrition below, one of the things our funder was concerned about was sugar-sweetened beverages, but we actually didn't find a lot of consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages among this population. But we did see that fruit and vegetable intake was lower than we would like, so 5 servings of fruits per week, 3 of green vegetables per week, definitely room for improvement there. And then briefly, tobacco, marijuana, and alcohol use were a little bit lower than we actually expected, although marijuana use was higher. Again, Bay Area, it's legal, there's that. But we actually found a lower alcohol rate, so only about 8% of our sample had reported heavy drinking in the past month, and about 38% of our sample did not drink at all in the past 30 days. So really briefly some results. This is a first pass on the immediate versus the delayed start in the first wave of participants. So this is the first 40 out of the 80 women. And we saw some improvements. So what we saw in the immediate start, they tended to drink about one more glass of water per day. They walked about 30 minutes more per week than the control group. And they added about 10 or 15 minutes of combined moderate or vigorous activity per week. So slight trends, none of them were statistically significant, but trends that we enjoy seeing as a good start for a pilot program. There was also a trend in the intervention group or folks that had gone through the program of eating more fruits and vegetables. So as you can see, the immediate start group trends toward having more servings of fruits and vegetables per day versus the delayed start group, which tends to have less per day. So again, a trend that we are happy to see. We also did some psychosocial measures, looked at quality of life measures and mindfulness measures. The physical health quality of life I'm going to talk about last. But we did see improvements in the mental health quality of life scores, although there still are, so the 47 and 44 are still lower than the 50 is sort of the average for the scale. And we did see improvements in the immediate start group in their mindfulness scores and a jump in their mindful eating scores, specifically an emotional response subscale. So they had made connections between when they ate based on emotions versus when they ate based on hunger. And we were really excited to see this because that was what qualitatively women reported enjoying in the program as well, was the mindful eating components and talking a lot about emotional eating. So the physical health quality of life, we actually saw lower scores for the immediate or intervention group versus the control group. And we're exploring this now. We think maybe in the baseline data set, this particular control group had a higher quality of life score to begin with, so there were some differences there. But remember back in the baseline, I talked about chronic pain and arthritis being really common. So I think this was just a sample that had an overall lower quality of life score with their physical health. For those reasons. We also did have people who had inexplicably like injuries or major things happening during the program, so I think that impacted as well. I'll give a caveat that I'm a qualitative researcher, so I'm sort of like, I had included comments with all these people of how they like broke their foot or hurt their arm and it really impacted their things, but it's hard to reflect that in a table. In terms of our main outcomes of interest, we unfortunately didn't see a lot of change here. So we didn't see any change in hemoglobin A1C across the groups. Part of that, we think, is because it's only a 12-week program, and it looks at the average of the last 3 months. So in the future, we're going to do a longer follow-up. We did see some changes and improvements in the LDL cholesterol. So we had more folks in the immediate start group who had ideal or normal cholesterol levels. But the HDL, we didn't see that. And part of our thinking around that from Don Hrabakin, who's the medical director at Lion Martin, is that a lot of HDL is natural genetics of how much good cholesterol you have. It's a harder number to move than the LDL or the bad cholesterol. So every study has limitations, and we certainly have ours as well. It's a small sample size, so we can't do a lot with the 80 in terms of comparing across subgroups. It's also a pilot program, and it was brand new. All the behavioral data that we looked at was self-reported, and we will have some low attendance and dose effects for certain groups because we had a drop-off quite often. But I think that WAM faced typical intervention challenges, as I said, with recruitment and retention for this population. Some implications that are getting lost in my icons at the bottom is that WAM was a feasible intervention for this target population of lesbian and bisexual women of size over 40, but we need strategies to increase adherence. Early results suggest that WAM is successful in helping women eat more mindfully and healthfully, as well as increasing women's activity levels and mobility levels. WAM, one thing that we didn't measure for, but women talked a lot about qualitatively, is that WAM really helped them combat social isolation that they were facing with aging. So this came up a lot in our focus groups, and it's the thing that I've been talking to women about for part of my dissertation project in individual interviews with these participants, that they really didn't know where to meet other lesbian and bisexual women their age. They weren't going to bars anymore. They weren't really going to community events. And one of the main reasons a lot of them joined WAM was, I guess I could improve my health, but really I want to meet other women because I don't know where to meet them and I'm lonely. So they really talked a lot about how that was what was important for them for WAM. And a number of our groups have continued meeting after the program was over on a monthly basis. In terms of next steps, we're continuing data analyses now. We're looking at comparisons of levels of change between the baseline and follow-up between randomized groups for the full sample, as well as individual pre-post tests. We're also looking at a per protocol analysis to look at dose response for key outcomes. So did, you know, it would follow that if they attended more sessions, they would see higher and better effects. And we're also currently seeking funding for a full program implementation across 3 years. So we would have about 200 participants, so we'd be able to do more with the data. And we're adding sessions based on the lack of results that we saw in terms of our blood tests, and then also based on participant requests. So we're adding sessions on menopause, which was a big request, cancer risks, because the funding we're applying for is breast cancer focused, and glycemic control. So we're going to talk a lot more about blood sugar and glycemic control in the next round of WAM. So I gave you an overview of WAM. I talked a little bit about the components, how we recruited, and our outcomes of interest, our early data analysis, which for us was exciting trends towards healthier behaviors, and our future directions. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dawn Hrabatkin, who's my supervisor at Lyon Martin, and then Alexandra Minnis, who's our primary investigator for the project, and our funders, the Office of Women's Health, and our wonderful scientific advisor and program officer at Office of Women's Health, Suzanne Haynes, who's really made a big push to get funding for lesbian and bisexual research across her entire career, and she's been a really great steward of this project across the country.